Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, I'll be shining the spotlight on Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation by the title of Amoris Laetitia, or The Joy of Love, focusing on the family. To celebrate Shakespeare, I'll be turning to Hamlet and Pope Paul VI. I'll also be joining our popular Latin lover to hear how Shakespeare drew inspiration from the ancient Romans. But first, as always at this time of week, let's listen to what Pope Francis had to say during his weekly general audience with pilgrims from across the world in St. Peter's Square. Chris Altieri reports.
Pope Francis held his weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square on Wednesday, during the course of which he began a new chapter in his catechesis on mercy, one focusing specifically on Christ's fulfillment of the promise and action of mercy revealed to humanity through God's chosen people, as expressed in the New Testament.
Fin dall'inizio del suo ministero, egli si è manifestato come Messia che si fa carico della condizione umana.
The Holy Father said that the Gospels show us a Jesus who, in every moment of his earthly life, made mercy visible. Meeting the crowds, announcing the Gospel, healing the sick, drawing close to the forgotten, and pardoning sinners. The Pope went on to say that the love Christ showed was a love open to all, a love which was fulfilled on the cross. Jesus, said Pope Francis, in an emphatic departure from his prepared remarks, did not bring hatred, nor did he bring enmity. He brought love, a great love, a heart open to all of us, a love that saves. The Holy Father went on to say that no one is excluded from God's merciful love, and that he proved this once and for all from the cross.
Tutti siamo peccatori, ma tutti siamo perdonati.
We are all sinners, he said in another emphatic departure, but we are all forgiven. We all have the possibility of receiving this pardon, which is the mercy of God. We need not fear, therefore, to recognize ourselves as sinners, confess ourselves sinners, because every sin was carried by the Son to the cross. Pope Francis concluded with an exhortation to frequent the sacrament of reconciliation, saying that it offers us the forgiveness that flows from the cross and which renews us in his grace, and inviting everyone everywhere in this Jubilee year to embrace the gospel with greater vigor and be heralds of the Father's mercy and forgiveness. I'm Chris Altieri.
Moving on in the broadcast, Pope Francis's post-synodal exhortation, Amoris Laetitia, on the joy of love, was officially released to the public at midday on Friday in the Vatican. Presenting the highly anticipated document in the press office of the Holy See were Cardinals Lorenzo Baldisseri, Secretary-General of the Synod of Bishops, and Christoph Schönborn, Archbishop of Vienna and a leading father of both the Extraordinary Assembly of the Synod of Bishops in 2014 and the Ordinary Assembly that followed that in 2015. Ahead of the press conference, Cardinal Schönborn was kind enough to sit down with us here at Vatican Radio ahead of the press conference. He told Chris Altieri that the Holy Father's desire in writing the exhortation was to give expression to the Church's confidence in the family, as intended by God in his design for humanity. Let's listen to the interview.
The document, Amoris Laetitia, it's not an apostolic constitution, it's not an encyclical, it's really not an instrument of law or policy of any kind. It's an exhortation. So my first question is, to what is the Holy Father exhorting the Church?
To the joy of love. Yes, it's really that. It's really that. Rejoice in the joy of familial and marital love. And he speaks about marital love not in a romantic way, not in abstract way. It's very realistic. It's close to life. It's close to daily life with all the worries and sorrows and joys of daily life. You can feel that he is a shepherd, a pastor who has been always very close to the people, to their families, to their daily worries and joys. So I think the key message is, don't speak first of all about problems. Speak about the achievement of family. I would like to cry out, the church has been seen for a long time as a warner, warnings. Yeah. Everywhere warnings and dangers and crises and problems. I think Pope Francis just wants us to say, please look first at the enormous gift that is marriage and family.
Yes, if perhaps too many, if I could put it that way, pastors do view the family as a problem to be solved or a series of them. The Holy Father does seem to have the idea that it's an asset.
Absolutely. I would say it is the asset.
And yet, not without its difficulties. The Holy Father is not without his encouragement for people who are facing difficulties and even have to deal with the dissolution and the disintegration of the family.
Yes, but there is an important pedagogical point in the whole document. It's not only for those who have visible problems in their marriage and family, but everybody, even the, so to say, best family, even the, so to say, exemplary family, they all need God's mercy, they all need conversion, they all need the help of grace. And the distinction is not so much between those who are successful in their marriage and those who are less successful in their marriage and family, but how do we, in our real situation, as it is, accept God's mercy, God's help, the church's fellowship, the church's aid? How do we help each other on this way? And his key word is inclusion. We are all included under the sin, and we are all included under God's mercy. So include those who are in difficulty and help them.
The observers and also some of the Synod Fathers during the course of the two assemblies that happened, the extraordinary and the ordinary, expressed some concerns about process and direction and content. To the extent that those concerns were legitimate, do you think they can be satisfied with the document and its outcome?
The diversity of critiques that has been expressed freely during the Synod is quite large, and I'm sure that not everybody will be satisfied with this document. And I think it was never the case. I can't remember any post-synodal exhortation that received applause from everybody. A fact is, Pope Francis has based his exhortation largely on the results of the two synods. And the texts he uses for his own writing have been voted by all by 2/3 majority of the Synod Fathers. So there is a large consensus behind. He is not innovating. He is continuing with what the Synod already had prepared and offered to him.
You talked about the exhortation and the sense of continuity that there is also with another document on the family from another shepherd. I'm thinking of the Familiaris Consortio.
I am profoundly convinced that 35 years after Familiaris Consortio, it's now 35 years, Pope Francis has given us a beautiful example of what Blessed John Henry Newman calls the organic development of teaching. John Paul II has already innovated in some points, not a break to tradition, but his theology of the body was something very new. His words on graduality in Familiaris Consortio were rather unusual. Yeah. his words on discernment in Familiaris Consortium 84 was something quite surprising. Yeah. His strong invitation to discern the different situations. Yeah. Pope Francis is very much in continuity with this, and the synod was, the two synods were. Discernment is a key word in Pope Francis' exhortation. Discernment, it's very Jesuitic. Yeah. Discernment of spirits. And that leads him to an attitude which was already present in Pope Benedict's teaching, in Pope John Paul II's teaching, that the Church offers help to those who are in so-called irregular situations. He adds a little note where he says, in certain cases also the aid, the help of the sacraments. That's all he says.
Well, that brings us nicely to the point, because when we're talking about discernment, we inevitably must discuss conscience. But we must let Mother Church form our consciences. Pope Francis certainly knows this, although it bears mention, because the sacraments, which ones and in what order, not to put too fine a point on it.
Yeah, I think it's fairly clear. There are situations where people in an irregular situation may really need the sacramental absolution, even if their general situation cannot be clarified. Pope Francis has given himself an example. When a woman comes to confess her abortion, the sin, the grave sin of abortion, not to relieve her, even if her situation is irregular, the discernment of the shepherd can be, and I would say must be, you have to help this person to be freed from her burden, even if you cannot tell her that her situation, marital situation, has been regularized by this absolution, but you cannot leave her out of the confessional with the burden of her grave sin. She finally had the courage to come to confess. That was the example he had given, and I think it's a very good example for what this little note could mean in certain cases, even the help of sacraments.
Now we've listened to Cardinal Christoph Schönborn, Archbishop of Vienna, speaking to Chris Altieri. Let's join Philippa Hitchin, who attended the press conference for the presentation of Pope Francis's post-synodal exhortation, Amoris Laetitia.
It was significant that Cardinal Schönborn of Vienna, son of divorced parents, was selected to present the key concepts at the heart of this new document. Important, too, that he suggested bishops should read the text with the help of married men and women who are grappling with the daily mix of enjoyment and struggles that family life presents. Because in its 9 chapters, he said, Pope Francis speaks about families with a clarity that's hard to find in any other teaching documents of the Church. Having said that, be warned, this is not a text that can be read in a hurry or summarized in a few sentences. It ranges from biblical and spiritual reflections on the family through very practical discussions of love, sexuality and the education of children to the many contemporary challenges of unemployment, inadequate housing, migration and violence that have an especially damaging effect on families. But throughout its 250 pages, as the Austrian cardinal made clear, something has changed in the way the Church speaks about people's personal lives. Judgmental expressions such as living in sin or irregular situations, he says, have been replaced by a language of welcome, inclusion and accompanying every person at whatever stage of life's journey they find themselves. It's clear, the document says, that we need a healthy dose of self-criticism to see just how the way we present our Christian beliefs and treat other people has contributed to the crisis of family life today. It's not just linguistic change either. At the core of Pope Francis's vision in this text is the concept of personal and pastoral discernment of particular cases, recognizing that the Church cannot simply judge all marital breakdowns or non-conventional relationships in the same way. Instead, pastors must learn to listen to each person's story and make room for the consciences of the faithful who are capable of carrying out their discernment in very complex situations. But what does this mean in practice, I hear you ask? Well, the definitive answers, the Cardinal said, are found in paragraph 300, where the Pope says neither the Synod nor this exhortation could be expected to provide a new set of general rules, canonical in nature and applicable to all cases. One size just doesn't fit all, as every parent knows perfectly well. Furthermore, the Pope says it's not he but the bishops in different countries who are best placed to seek solutions that are culturally sensitive to local traditions and practice. Pope Francis trusts in the joy of love, it's quite clear, though he does say he understands those who prefer a more rigorous pastoral care, which leaves no room for confusion. But if we see everything as black and white, he warns, we close off God's way of grace and growth. Instead, we must respond to people with generous love to help them overcome barriers and be fully welcomed into the life of the Church, including, if you read the footnotes carefully, with the help of the sacraments, which are not a prize for the perfect, but a powerful medicine and nourishment for the weak. So is this document overturning traditional Church teaching on marriage and the family? Absolutely not. The text is full of quotes from previous popes and is a passionate endorsement of the joy that family life can bring. And while it doesn't provide cut-and-dried answers to all the challenges, it certainly does try to raise the questions and ensure that the Church keeps the door open to the ongoing conversation. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
You were listening there to Philippa Hitchin reporting on Pope Francis's post-synodal exhortation, Amoris Laetitia, on the joy of love. Now, on a totally different note, to commemorate the 400th anniversary of William Shakespeare's death, there'll be a performance here in Rome of Hamlet by Shakespeare's Globe. It will take place on Thursday, 13th of April, in the heart of Rome, at the Palazzo della Cancelleria. You may already know how Blessed Paul VI was often likened to Hamlet, this most famous of Shakespeare's characters, and how in the 1960s he attended a performance of Hamlet. But why don't you stay tuned for a feature I prepared for you with sound clips of Paul VI speaking in English. To begin the story, I've chosen to travel to India with Paul VI. Stay tuned.
The press which you represent can be a most potent instrument of great good. Always be faithful to the truth. That is the question.
That is the question. The words of Pope Paul VI provoked hilarity and clapping among the journalists gathered around him. They understood that reference to Hamlet's famous soliloquy. It was December 1964, and during an impromptu press conference, the Pope unleashed an unusual self-deprecating sense of humour, showing an awareness of a specific journalistic quirk, that of repeatedly reporting a quote likening him to this most famous of Shakespearean characters. It's a familiar story going back to the days when Pope Paul was still Cardinal Archbishop Montini of Milan and the Roman Pontiff his predecessor John the 23rd. Said Pope John, inquiring after the Cardinal in his home diocese of Milan, "Well, how's your Hamlet Cardinal?" A shrewd remark, never to be forgotten by the press, resurfacing when the Cardinal Archbishop of Milan was himself elected to the See of Peter in June 1963. And not just in the local press. Even the Newsweek issue marking Paul VI's recent election to the papacy, which sported his photograph still dressed as a cardinal on the cover, quoted it. Running an editorial by the title of "We Have a Pope, Paul VI, Baffling Brilliant," only a few lines down, there was an entire paragraph dedicated to the Hamlet Cardinal.
Cardinal Montini, at a more searching look, is a baffling figure both in person and in politics. Although he was the first prelate whom Pope John elevated to cardinal, the uncomplicated John apparently had ambivalent feelings about the intellectual Montini.
And And Papa Montini was indeed an intellectual, a man at ease in literary circles familiar with Shakespeare, having visited Stratford-on-Avon 3 decades earlier. As he himself once explained in the exclusive recording in English you're about to hear, a word of warning, don't be misled by the royal we, dictated by the papal protocol of the time.
Pope Paul was speaking about himself.
The visit we made about 30 years ago, as an inquiring and hasty tourist to the city and the home of Shakespeare in Stratford of Avon, with the impression of fantastic riches and psychological truth.
The impression of fantastic riches and psychological truth, said Pope Paul, speaking on the occasion of celebrations for the 4th centenary of the birth of Shakespeare. It was 1964. Among his audience, directors and actors of the Royal Stratford Theatre, exceptionally performing in Rome, just down the road from St. Peter's.
The commemoration is particularly adapted to Rome, always savvy and prompt as she is to honor the high achievements of the human spirit, and happy today to celebrate in this supreme writer the magnificent cultural tradition and artistic genius of the English people.
Shakespeare's writings, Paul VI stressed, were profoundly human, ever open to adventurous and poetic exploration, leading to the discovery of moral laws which make life great and sacred.
God exists. There is a life after this life. Evil doing is punished and good rewarded.
Clearly for Pope Paul VI, genius and faith could go hand in hand. He believed Shakespeare's lofty genius and powerful language would induce humankind to listen with great reverence to the great truths expounded in his works. Perhaps that affinity to Hamlet constantly attributed to him, stemming from his apparent inability to merely brush aside the daunting difficulties in his personal quest for truth, may not have displeased him altogether. But why not listen then to that famous soliloquy?
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing, end them.
In the twilight years of his 15-year pontificate, Paul VI may have fleetingly remembered John XXIII's remarks while jotting down a series of notes. What is my state of mind? He wrote. Am I Hamlet or Don Quixote? On the left, on the right, I don't feel I have properly been understood. Who knows whether or not he was understood as Pope? What's certain is that the man to inherit from his predecessor to the papacy, a council it is said he would never have called, was a prudent and far-sighted man who avoided those kind of decisions where another would have acted first and reflected later. A big thank you to our Vatican Radio sound engineers for making that program possible. But now, to stay with our Shakespearean theme, it's time to join our Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster. Father, I'd like to speak to you about Shakespeare and lies today. Lies like telling lies. How would you translate the word Shakespeare in Latin?
Well, Shakespeare, Well, Shakespeare is the Shakespeare, you know. Quatiens talum, shaking the spear.
And lies?
It doesn't do a lie. Doesn't work.
What do you mean? How do you say a lie?
It's
the eighth commandment.
Yeah.
How do you translate the eighth commandment?
Mendacium.
You shall not bear false witness against your neighbour.
Non facies falsum testimonium adversus proximum tuum. You will not make non facies, I find a mistake in the Vulgate says.
Now I'm going to quote from Shakespeare as you like
it.
A courteous retort. Quote, sir, I am not of your opinion. I beg to differ from you.
I am not of your opinion. Hey, that's easy. Tue opiniones non sum ego. Velim, I'd like to...
I beg to differ from you.
Velim tecum dissentire.
Would the Romans have spoken that way?
Why not? Velim tecum dissentire. I would like to disagree with you.
A countercheck. How do you say countercheck?
What is a countercheck? What does that mean?
To disagree, basically.
And what is the text?
The text is from Shakespeare, As You Like It. How do you translate
As You Like It? Ut tibi placet.
Okay, a quote from Ut tibi placet. Sir, how dare you utter such a falsehood? Sir, you know that is not true. Sir.
Quomodo domine. Quomodo audes tantum proferimendatium. To bring out such a falsehood.
Sir, you know that is not true.
You know. Illud verum non esse novisti.
We're talking about disagreeing as a countercheck, which is probably not something you would use so much today. More prosaically, the word counter, how would you say under the counter, meaning black market?
Oh, Lord, deliver us how they said that. I don't even know. Under the counter, clam or secreto secretly or clam secretly or in abscondito secretly. You have to go from language to language. That's the problem here. And
then we've just spoken about the black market under the counter. We go back to our theme. Did the Romans tell white lies?
White lies. That's another one. Well, they didn't have the word for white lies, that's for sure.
Oh, you see, I caught you out.
Yeah.
The Romans didn't have a
They probably did tell white lies, but mendacia honesta.
Well,
honest lies. Mendacia proba, good lies. But didn't have the idea of, white, black, green, blue, black. They didn't have white lies. They didn't. There's no such thing in Latin as a mendacium candidum. Candidum mendacium would be an honest lie.
It's a contradiction. Is there a contradiction between Shakespeare and the Romans, or do you think that Shakespeare had a Roman mind, a Latin mind?
Oh, my Lord, Shakespeare got everything from the Romans. What are you talking about? And half of his plays were, I won't say, translations from the Romans, from Plautus, on the way to the Forum, I don't know, he has a famous thing. One man on the way to the Forum and all this other stuff, he got all his characters and everything is from the Romans.
Are you accusing him of plagiarizing?
Just about.
How do you say plagiarizing in Latin?
But that's a plagiare, that's Greek. But, furtum, sunt furta literaria. Literary robberies.
Our popular Latin lover, Carmelite, Father Reginald Foster, was for many years and under many popes, papal Latinist, and is currently teaching Latin in the United States.
And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbury.
Laudator Jesus Christus.